Well, tonight we're going to continue on with Sunday's theme. Sunday, Pastor Kurt was talking about waiting, and waiting is a major part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. But you know, the idea of waiting is a really big deal in being a follower of Jesus. God's people over the years have been playing a waiting game for years and years and years. If you go back to the very beginning of the story, early on, one of the great heroes was a guy named Abraham. God promised that he was going to have a child, and then nothing happened for decades. And Abraham had to wait and wait and wait for this promised child to be born for year after year after year. He just had to wait and wait and sit with it. It's not anybody else not cool with waiting? Like, I'll be honest, I have a hard time waiting, like, in line at Dunkin' Donuts. This is my threshold for waiting. Like, fast food is not quite fast enough. And so, I am just a fast-paced person, but being a Christian means waiting. Abraham had to wait. And then, and I love these verses, several years later, God promised Abraham's descendants a whole land that would be their land forever. The best part of the Middle East. He promised it to them. And then they found themselves in slavery far, far from there. And they had to wait. And they had to wait. And they had to wait for 400 years. They were waiting for God to fulfill his promise. And close to the end of that waiting, in Exodus chapter 2, we have this wonderful verse that we're going to pause on a little bit later on tonight, this wonderful, wonderful verse. You can look it up, Exodus chapter 2. Exodus is the second book in your Bible, or the one that starts with E if you're clicking. Exodus chapter 2, verse 23, it says this. It says, years passed, and the king of Egypt died. And the Israelites, those are God's chosen people, continued to groan under their burden of slavery. They were slaves. They cried out for help, and their cry rose up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant promise, the promise he had made hundreds of years earlier to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He looked down on the people of Israel and knew it was time to act. I love the end of that. He looked down on the people and knew it was time to act. That's what we're always waiting for. We're waiting for this moment where God declares that it is time to act. And then, as soon as they get their land, nothing works the way it's supposed to. Clearly, there are still giant problems. And so God promises that he's going to send a special king that is going to fix all of the problems. He's going to fix their national problems. He's going to fix all their enemies. He's going to make all their enemies disappear. He's going to make sure that there are no poor. He's going to make sure he's going to solve everything. And for 1,000 years, God sends special messengers promising that this important king is coming. He's coming. He's coming. Just keep waiting. Just keep waiting. He's coming. Just keep waiting. He's coming for 1,000 years. 1,000 years. And then Jesus shows up as that special king. And here we are in the time after the king showed up. And here we are waiting again. Now we're waiting for him to come back and set everything to rights. He has adequately proven that he is king, but he has not fully established his kingdom here, though he has elsewhere, I suppose. But we're waiting again. We're waiting again for Jesus to come back. Waiting is a huge part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And there's this amazing moment at the very end of the Bible that talks about the end of the story as we know it. It's in the book of Revelation, which tells us the end of the story. And in the book of Revelation, chapter 6, and the book of Revelation is kind of funny. It gives us this opportunity to track the story of the end of world events from two different points of view. First of all, it tells us a little bit about what's going to happen on earth, but it keeps cutting back and forth between what happens on earth and how that is perceived from heaven. And so a lot of the perspective is as if there were a camera in heaven, not watching the events, but watching what goes on in heaven during the events of the final era of human history. And in one of those moments where the camera is focused in on heaven and what's going on there, we see this moment where God is on his throne and God, a whole bunch of God's people are gathered around the throne of God. They have, for all intents and purposes, finally made it. These are the ones who made it to heaven. These are the ones who get to be right up close to God for all of eternity. And you know what they're doing? I find this fascinating. Revelation chapter 6, verse 9. It says, when the Lamb broke the fifth seal, he was in the process of breaking these seals on the scroll that were allowing him to orchestrate the future of history. I, the guy who's watching all of this happen, saw under the altar the souls of all who had been faithful in their testimony. And they shouted to the Lord and said, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you judge the people who belong to this world and avenge our blood for what they've done to us? Then a white robe was given to each of them. And they were told to rest just a little longer until the full number of their brothers and sisters, their fellow servants of Jesus who were martyred, had joined them. This amazing moment. These folks look for all the world like they made it. And what are they doing? Waiting. Even there in heaven, the souls of the faithful martyrs who have done everything right are just waiting. Waiting, apparently, is something we should get good at. Waiting is a natural... You can't hope that you can get past the waiting game in the spiritual journey. You can't hope, well, if I think that if I waited out this season, eventually I'll get past waiting. Eventually I'll get to the action and I'll never have to wait again. You will always have to wait. Always have to wait. And so I want to talk about three values that I see in waiting that can hopefully help us to navigate this time of waiting a little bit better. And the reason we pause to discuss waiting in this time of year is that all of us are somewhat keyed in on waiting for Christmas to happen. I don't know what your Christmas season is like. For some people, Christmas is this sort of hectic, crazy time of trying to get a bunch of stuff done. For some folks, Christmas season is a time of trying to avoid everybody they do not want to have to talk to. Right? Like, let's be honest. Which, by the way, I really want you to know, we mean this with everything in us. The reason that we have church on Christmas Day is not because somewhere in the Bible it says we have to. We have church on Christmas Day because we are a family. And on Christmas, I want to be with my family. And so I would love to see you at 10 a.m. on Christmas Day. And I would love for us to all celebrate Christmas together as one giant family of people who are all trying to follow Jesus together. You are welcome to bring, you know, if you need to start a new tradition with your, like, physical family and you want to bring all of them, we would love to have them come. This is a great service to invite your family to. We have nursery upstairs, but then all the other kids, five and up, all join us in this service. So it's our family service of the year, and myself and Pastor Tanisha, our children's pastor, work together to make sure that this is a moment where we all get to gather as a spiritual family and as a physical family, all together to have this one true celebratory moment. Christmas is about tradition, guys. I would love if you are able for this to be one of your traditions. And we also have, you know, and we need to fill up the time before that too, and I get that. That's why Sunday, the day before Christmas, we'll have our normal three services. We have this amazing speaker coming in, this guy named Greg Hubbard, who has been here a whole bunch of other times. And Greg, yes, this is what happens when people know Greg. Greg is one of the most dynamic speakers we've ever had come to the church. He's amazing. I will give you this one hint, though, and he is very quick to share this. He is a champion sweater, so just skip the front row that day. But he is amazing, and you will walk out feeling like God has given you a gift this Christmas season if you're there. on one of those three Sunday morning services on the 24th. So come on out for all of that. We would love to have you come. So that is not what we were going to talk about, but this is a time where there's a lot of waiting happening naturally. And we have, one of the things I love about the Christmas season is that it is a time we remind ourselves that waiting is good. Because we put, you know, a lot of the time when you're trying, and I am an impatient waiter, by the way, because I'm impatient at everything. It's something I'm working on really hard. But I'm an impatient person. If I order a package on Amazon, I am like a six-year-old. I will check outside every 5 minutes if I am home. My poor wife has to endure, "Do you think it's coming today?" every day. If it's late, the poor woman has to endure me saying, like 56 times, "Do you think it's going to be here? I bet it's going to be here. It was supposed to be here yesterday. I wonder if it's here today. Maybe it'll be here today. Maybe they're just running a little bit late. You know, normally they mail it by today. Maybe the mail gets here a little bit late today. I don't know, but I bet it'll be here today. I think it's going to be here today. Do you think it's going to be here today? I think it's going to be here today." This is what happens. I am not a great waiter. But this time of year, we love to wait. I know this because instead of trying to forget about the thing we're waiting for, Christmas Day, we put up thousands of reminders all over the world, like in the streets and in our homes and in the stores and everywhere we go, we are posting reminders. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And no matter what, there's this giant reminder, no matter what is going on in your life, something tells us we should be excited that it's coming. Even if family is awful, it's something we should be excited. It's coming. Okay, like there is this, we have this developing habit of choosing to be expectant in Christmas. And this is an important thing in the spiritual journey. Cultivating expectancy is a really big deal when you're following Jesus. You should be expecting great things. And so we choose this moment of the year to talk about waiting, because we're already waiting. And we have a giant living example of waiting right in front of us. So how do you wait? I think there are three things that help us wait. First of all, we can wait through hoping. Hope can help us to wait. Waiting brings discomfort. Have you ever noticed this? If you are waiting for something, you are not content with the present. Make sense so far? If you are waiting, what you're saying is, "I want things to be different." If you're saying, "I want things to be different," you are saying, "I am not content with the way things are. I'm just not okay with this. Things ought to be different." Now, for a little kid waiting for Christmas, what they mean is, "I don't have enough toys and I'm going to get some." For the rest of us, we may mean, some of my family members, I think what they mean is, "I cannot wait to be done with all the extra Christmas errands." But that too is hope, right? Things are going to be different if I can just finish the last errands. So years ago, my wife and I decided we were going to try to do all our errands by Thanksgiving, which works like a charm. None of the stores are crowded. Nothing is chaotic. And then from Thanksgiving to Christmas, we just get to enjoy the season and the parties and all of that and just kind of float through it. It's great. But however you do it, there is some kind of discomfort that waiting entails. It means that I'm not okay with something. And this is the thing I think we normally think of as a bad thing. It's bad to be discontent. It's bad to be uncomfortable. Anybody like being comfortable? The heat was off in my house this morning, and I have an electric blanket. And like, I don't leave it on while I'm sleeping because I'm afraid I'll either burn myself or electrocute myself or whatever bad thing happens. I don't really understand. It just scares me. So one hand comes out from under the covers, right? Like reaching for the on switch of the electric blanket. Why? Because I like comfort. And it was my warm bed or get up at 5 a.m. and go to the gym. I did end up at the gym, I'm just saying. But it was a battle because I don't like discomfort. One of the reasons hope is challenging is that hope reveals our discomfort with the world the way it is. If we're talking about hoping for something little, it may be discomfort in little ways. If we're talking about hoping for something big, we may be talking about discomfort in giant ways. You know, when they were initially waiting for Jesus to show up for that 1,000 years when all they knew was a king is coming. Over and over again, all they knew was the whole world is not okay. Our nation is not being treated properly. We are being enslaved, and that's awful. All they knew was their national story was deeply painful, and their personal stories were deeply broken, and they knew that they needed a king to come and fix it, and they didn't know what the king was going to do. They had some hints. They didn't know who the king was going to be, though they had some hints. All they knew was that the present was not okay. And if you are feeling that way, I want you to know something. You're in a good spot. You are right on the edge of experiencing hope. Because hope is born out of discomfort. You can't want a different and better future if you are completely content with the present. You can only want a different and better future if you are discontent with the present. So, if you are discontent, celebrate that discontent, because it may be one step before you experience real hope. So what is hope? What exactly is hope? Well, this is where we have to ask ourselves some questions about discomfort. See, discomfort can be very decisive. It can drive us to a decision point. One of those decisions we have to make is, will we allow the discomfort to drive us towards hope? Hope is a belief that the future can be better. That's it. Hope is a belief that the future can be better. Now, we understand that when we're talking about Jesus, we can have hope. Why? Because in all honesty, if you are the only power driving your life forward, can you guarantee the future is going to be better? No. Absolutely not. There are forces and powers bigger than you in the world. Periodically, I'm in a conversation with people, and I hear this all the time, and some of you, I'm sure, have said this at times. I say, you know what? It's all going to work out. It's all going to be okay. It'll be fine. It'll work out. And I often stop people and say, there is no guarantee of that. Because there are a lot of situations where whether or not it works out or not depends entirely on the choices people make. So we can't say, you know what, it's going to work out and then do whatever we want. We have to choose that it's going to work out and then do what we need to do. Right? And more importantly, the only way you can say it's going to work out is if there is someone bigger than you and more powerful than you that you are surrendering control to. This is Jesus. Jesus is bigger than you, more powerful than you, and if you are surrendering control to him, one way or the other, he will put his reputation on the line that he'll take care of things. Now, what that's going to look like if you are genuinely surrendering to him, you have no idea. That's what surrender means. But one way or the other, you can be confident that he can create a future that is better than the present. You can be confident that his future for you is better than your present for you. Big deal. Hope is believing that Jesus can create a better future for you. Whether that is tomorrow or next week or next year or 20 years from now or eternity in heaven when you die, whatever it is, Jesus can create a better future for you. So will my discomfort drive me to a surrendered confidence in Jesus? Or will my discomfort drive me to try to take back control and run things on my own? Which way is my discomfort going to drive me towards? Because people go both ways. Sometimes the same person goes both ways in the same day. Anybody ever felt like that? Like some moments you're like, yeah, you know what? Whatever Jesus wants to do, I am going to do what Jesus wants me to do and let him run the show. And there are other times, Nope, I don't trust Jesus in this one. I got to do what I got to do. Right? We're all over the map on this sometimes. But this is hope. Hope is believing there's a possible future. And if we allow our discomfort to drive us to hope, we have a great chance at a future. And I want to tell you something. For those of you who don't feel like you have hope, for those of you who don't feel like you believe the future can be better, somebody in here, this is life-changing. You have the power to control what you believe. You have the power to choose hope. You have the power when your emotions say, Jesus can't do this, or the future can't be better, you have the power to say, no, that's not true. When your mind comes up with a million excuses why you're not good enough for Jesus to care about you, or you're not significant enough, or Jesus is not going to help you, and here's all the millions of reasons, you have the power to reject your own thoughts. I do this with my son. My son is the perfect example of this. We do this all the time. He will be sitting there doing homework, and there will come this moment where it's impossible is like written on his face. And he just, it can't be done. And if I try to force him into doing his homework, it is literally impossible. Like if I asked him to pick up a book and when he's in that state of mind and move it from here to over here, it could not be done. It is, the universe is impossible. So we've gotten into this habit that is great for him, and it's a little harder for us, but we can do the same thing. We've gotten into this habit where I'll say to him, hey, Wesley, I want you to close your eyes. And he'll say, I don't wanna. I'll say, I don't care, I want you to close your eyes. That's all you have to do right now, just close your eyes. So he closes his eyes, I'll say, okay, you can't open your eyes till you believe you can. And he'll sit there, the first couple times we did, he's like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, that's fine, then you can sit there for like 20 minutes, I don't care. What if it's an hour? I don't care. You can sit there as long as you want. I need to feed you with your eyes closed when it comes dinner time, that's fine. You are keeping your eyes closed until you believe you can. Because I know you can, and that's not helping you. You need to know you can. So keep your eyes shut until you know you can. We get to control what we believe. He does not believe he can. But it's funny, he's getting better at it now. It used to take a really long time. Now it'll take like 1 minute. Last night, I was like, no, yes, you can. Close your eyes. He's like, I don't want to. I still don't understand why he doesn't want to, by the way, since he knows that when he opens his eyes, it's going to be okay. But somehow that escapes him. Maybe we'll get there, but close your eyes. Literally, his eyes were closed for 30 seconds. He's like, all right, I'm good. Let's go. Controlling hope, controlling our belief, we have spent years letting those spiritual muscles get flabby. But they are just spiritual muscles, and with practice, they can get stronger. We can control them better and better. You get to control your hope. You get to control your belief. You get to control what you expect. You get to control those things. Yes, God can. You just said, no matter what's going on, yes, God can. And you may, like, at the beginning, you're talking like you're just going to shout it out loud. You're going to look like a crazy person. That's okay. Like, if you need to look whatever and people are going to judge you, that's okay. That may be the price you pay for working out in this particular muscle. So that's the first thing. You wait through hope. It can be better. The second thing is you wait through prayer. Not only do we have to ask ourselves, will our discomfort drive us towards hope? We ask ourselves, will our discomfort drive us toward God? Very, very specifically here. Confidence. This is a big deal. What is prayer all about? Two things you need to be confident of. If you're going to pray the way you need to pray, you need to be confident, number one, that you are a person of great enough significance that God himself wants to listen to you. This is a true thing about you, by the way. This isn't a rumor. This isn't just some random thing I'm telling you you ought to hope for. You are, in fact, of great enough significance in the world that God himself wants to listen to you. So you walk into conversations with God very confidently. The other thing you have to be confident of is the fact that the God who wants to listen to you is very good. He's very good. He will not hurt you. Even if you ask him to do something that could hurt you, he will not do it. You are completely safe. Nothing that has ever harmed you was done at God's hand. God will never hurt you because he loves you. God wants to care for you. If you believe that you are significant and God is good, when you are discomfited, when you are uncomfortable, when you are discontent, your instinct will be to march yourself into God's presence and say, God, this is not okay with me. The same way that in these two passages I read to you, the Israelites were groaning before God. God, this is not what you promised. What is going on here? The same way that in Revelation, the martyrs were saying to God, God, this is not just. What is going on here? They had the courage to come to God not okay. Not even okay with God's apparent silence. I love this. One of the last verses that Jesus, I got to remember where I put my Bible. One of the last verses Jesus ever quotes is from Psalm 22, and I love the fact that Jesus entered into this experience. Psalm 22 is a prayer that every Jewish person in Jesus' day memorized. It begins this way. Psalm 22, since this is great. It says, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? This was a standard way of praying in Jesus' day. That God himself, becoming a human being on the cross, God enters into this kind of prayer. When God becomes a person from his point of view, it looks like God has abandoned him too. God understands. And you can go to God with all the confidence you want, that you can be as raw as you need to be with God. And I will tell you, I do not know how God responds to the God, man. Like, there are sometimes people praying, they're like, God, I know everything is okay and everything's all right and you've got it all. And I don't know how God responds to that, because sometimes when I look around at the world, I'm not sure they're looking at the same world I'm looking at. But I want to challenge you, when you pray, the way you pray with hope is not to say, hey, it's all okay. The way you pray with hope is to say, God, it's not okay and I want you to change it and here's what I want you to do. Here's exactly these martyrs at the foot of God. They're not saying, God, you know, whatever you got, that's good. They're like, God, this is not just what you are doing. Imagine, what is the audacity of this prayer? God, what you are doing is not just, so you need to do something else. That is a courageous prayer. When you are, like, if there is smiting distance, they were in it, right? Like, they were clearly within smiting distance. But God doesn't smite them. God's like, you just gotta wait. You just gotta wait, because I have a plan that is more generous than you can imagine, more gracious than you can imagine. I just don't want anybody to miss this opportunity. So just keep waiting. I know it hurts, but keep waiting. My generosity is what's driving this. God is even good in making people wait. It is his generosity and his kindness and his love that make us have to wait, because he is being generous and kind and loving, not just towards us, but to all the people who desperately need him everywhere. So we can go to God with prayer when we're waiting. When you're waiting for something, pray. Pray like you care. And this is the third thing here. Yeah, this is the third thing here. You wait through transformation. Waiting is a time that changes you. Waiting is a moment you are spiritually situated to be profoundly changed. This is symbolically shown in that verse that I read from Revelation, where the folks are given these white garments symbolizing purity or holiness. Given these white garments during the time that they're waiting. Waiting has this incredible ability. First of all, if we're being honest, It has this incredible ability to reveal our weaknesses, faults, brokenness, and sin. All our junk comes out when we're waiting. Anybody ever notice that? Like, I am a much better person when I have everything I want. But when I am impatient, my fuse is a little shorter. I'm not as able to speak as I would like. I am not able to think as clearly as I like. It's tough when we're waiting. Waiting brings out our junk. And it's designed to do that because it's supposed to be a time where our junk is healed and transformed. God's bringing it out in order to fix it. God's bringing it out in order to heal it. He doesn't ever want to say, yep, you're right, you're a mess, catch you later. Right? Like, yes, you're right, you're a mess. Let's work on that. I love you in your mess, he's saying. And I do too, but we're talking about God right now. Saying, I love you in your mess. But I love you enough to not leave you in it. So in this time of waiting, will you let me change you? Will you let me transform you? He has a vision of who you can become that you wouldn't even recognize. He has a vision of who you could be in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years that is beyond your conception. If you will allow him free rein to transform you while you wait. And so we wait through hope. We wait through prayer. We wait through transformation. We wait. And this is hard stuff, by the way. When we're talking about waiting, it really, and Christmas is a good reminder of this too, waiting hurts. Because there's like all sorts of junk going on in the world and you're like trying to keep your head down and wait and all the junk gets, it just gets messy. And I understand that. So I want to encourage you that waiting, while difficult, can be worthwhile. That's the whole point I want to make tonight. Waiting, while difficult, can be worthwhile. And I want to ask ourselves this question. What is it we're waiting for? God wants to capture your mind. He wants to capture your heart. He wants to capture your imagination with a potential future that is worth waiting for. A whole big chunk of the book of Revelation, it was written to give you an idea of what the future could be. There are all sorts of pictures in the Bible that are designed to give you an image of what the future might will hold so that you can become fascinated with it and fixated on it and deeply discontent with the present. So I encourage you, go to those places. Go to the book of Isaiah. Go to the book of Revelation, particularly the last two chapters. Look at what Jesus says the future holds. Allow yourself to long for a future, because God paints a beautiful picture of this future. It's a picture of a future where he is fully reigning over all things. One of my favorite verses. I've read it often enough. This is how he describes the future. That same man who was watching all of what happened in heaven, John, says this. He says, I heard a loud voice from the throne, God's throne, saying, look, God's home is now among his people, and he will live with them, and they will be his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain. All these things are gone forever. And the one on this throne said, look, I am making everything new. Everything new. No more death. No more pain. No more crying. No more hurt. No more loss. It's all going to be gone. Whatever else your week, your December, your next 6 months, your next year holds for you. That was from Revelation chapter 21, verse 3. It is worth memorizing those couple of verses just so that you know what it is you get to hope for. Your hope is not that tomorrow everybody will be nice to you, because tomorrow everybody might not be nice to you. Your hope is not that your family will get it right this year, because you don't get to control that. Your hope, the hope, in some circles throughout the years, it's been written with capital letters, capital T, capital H, the hope, is that you will enter that place where there is no more death or crying or pain or fear or loss, because God is going to make his home with you. Have you ever, anybody ever been lonely? Do you know you were designed to live in a place in which you were never lonely? But the incredible absence of God from our world leaves us all lonely at times, because we weren't made for a world that was this God-emptied. That loneliness is a reminder to you that you were designed for a world that doesn't have that loneliness. Where God sets up shop, he lives, he takes up residence in like the apartment next to yours, and he's always there. Where he is always one knock away, and he's going with you everywhere. And he is living life with you every minute of every day. And that is what we taste now. And you have the privilege of having, if you are a follower of Jesus, you have his spirit resident in you as the Bible calls it a deposit, a promise of things to come. You're never alone now. The Holy Spirit is always with you, whether you feel that way or not. It's just a true thing. If you are a follower of Jesus, the Holy Spirit is with you. That is a promise of things to come, that someday you will live in that place where he is always there, always manifest, always present in the fullest and completest way. That is the hope. And every Christmas, we practice hoping just a little bit more. Every Christmas, we practice waiting just a little bit more. Because we want to be good at waiting. Because we have something worth waiting for.